Welcome to the HR Chat Podcast, bringing the best of the HR and talent communities to you.
Huge numbers of employees are reporting a significant worsening of their mental health and expressing anxiety and safety concerns as workplaces plan to reopen. The COVID-19 pandemic is highlighting the need to urgently increase investment in services for mental health or risk a massive increase in mental health conditions in the coming months, according to a policy brief on COVID-19 and mental health issued by the United Nations on May 14th. In this HR Chat interview, we're going to consider how mindfulness can be used by HR and leaders to address mental health, help build mental agility, and better respond to stress and anxiety. Our guest this time is Dr. Jeff Soloway, founder and chief training officer at MindWellU, a health tech firm that delivers research-backed e-mental health tools that are shown to increase resilience, lower stress, and improve performance. Jeff has been working in the area of health promotion, mindfulness, and well-being for almost 20 years. He completed a PhD on mindfulness at the University of Toronto, as well as a Master's of Education on Holistic Education. Jeff has worked as an instructor at the University of Toronto and the University of British Columbia, and as a consultant offering mindfulness-based workshops and programs for professionals in the workspace. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Bill.
So let's jump straight in then. It's an extremely difficult time for a lot of people. I've shared with our listeners on this show before that personally, I've been struggling, as have many, many people, being in lockdown, not having the same outlets that they would usually have. And a lot of people now facing a lot of mental challenges and stresses in terms of the prospect of going back into the workplace and the health risks that maybe presents. Can you begin, Jeff, by describing how depression and anxiety have risen as a result of the recent crisis and isolation imposed on employees? And can you also offer any statistics around that?
We're seeing rising numbers of mental health issues, mental health problems as a result of COVID-19. And there's been a number of surveys been put out over the past month and some statistics from them showing that 56% of Canadians say their mental health has been negatively affected by COVID-19, including 10% who said the impact has been very negative. We've also seen from the Mental Health Research of Canada, we saw numbers around depression reporting an increase from 7% reporting high levels of depression to now 16%. So those numbers are concerning. We're looking at numbers around higher anxiety and most prevalent in actually 18 to 34 year olds at 43%, with numbers from 55 and older at 27%. So we're seeing mental health concerns rising across the board. And no doubt as we're starting to look at returning back into work, these anxieties, these stresses are only continuing to exacerbate as we move into kind of phase two or the next phase. And really, if we were concerned, you know, one of the underlying triggers of stress and anxiety is uncertainty. And really, there's continues to be a lot of uncertainty around what's next. We might be opening up and returning to some ways of being that we once knew, but things are far from going back to what they were. And the common language around creating a new normal. So I think where we need to start grappling is that there is this new normal emerging, and it's not so much going back to the way things used to be.
From what you've seen and what you've read, and obviously we're all grappling with whatever this new normal actually means, Jeff, how is anxiety manifesting itself in employees as they face this prospect of re-entering the workplace?
One way that it's manifesting itself is in terms of substance abuse. And we actually saw another study looking at increased substance abuse percentages that Canadians with lower self-perceived mental health during the COVID COVID-19 pandemic are more likely to increase their use of cannabis, alcohol, and tobacco, according to Statistics Canada. So like you mentioned off the top, our outlets, the ways our typical patterns or our positive coping mechanisms have been kind of stripped away from us during this time. So not only are we going through a really scary time, we're being faced with great disruption, but we're also been taken away from these habits and positive coping tools that we had in our lives. Things like going to the gym, eating well, having social connections. These things are no longer available to us, or we've had to change. And if we haven't adapted, and if we haven't developed new habits in our life in order to, you know, exercise, eat well, stay connected, then we're going to witness rising levels of mental health and physical health issues, and like what we're seeing, and this manifests in anxiety. And we're also seeing employees who are going back into the workplace. They're concerned about going back into the workplace. Many people have responded to surveys saying that they feel like they could continue working from remotely and not wanting to necessarily return. They're concerned about meeting in person, both colleagues and clients, even things like shaking hands. So people who have the, you know, the disposition or propensity to be anxious are likely going to be triggered more often now as a result. And anxiety can keep us locked in the stress response, this fight, flight, or freeze response in our body. And when we are in a state of anxiety, it's more difficult for us to be productive and to be at our best.
Let's talk a little bit now about the responsibilities of employers to their employees, and what are some of the consequences for employers if they don't necessarily tackle the rising levels of anxiety and depression. What are we talking about here, Jeff? Are we talking about massive risks in terms of high levels of absenteeism and presenteeism and lower productivity?
I think we've seen a trend towards more and more attention being paid towards mental health in the workplace and the need for it, the concern for it, around productivity loss, and, you know, huge numbers, dollar figures around the costs of mental health in the workplace. And now this has just really pushed it to the forefront. And I would say that if we had to find, you know, some of the positive notes around COVID-19, I would say that some of them revolve around organizations paying more attention to the importance of mental health. I know psychological health and well-being has been a rising theme as well. And that's also been, you know, that's closely related and taking up with more significance. So now what we can expect to see is this is not an issue that's going to go away. This is not something that's going to get easier. You know, we're talking about the response to the pandemic. The number one concern is around mental health, and we've seen the World Health Organization put out calls around this. We see governments put responses out around services trying to support employees and individuals. So it's not going to be a short-term solution. And what we've seen to date is that mental health affects absenteeism. Presenteeism is huge. The propensity of people to be at work but not really productive, being caught up in stress and being kind of locked by stress, and how that can turn into also how that can impact teams and relationships and conflict. We can also see the impact on, you know, disability management. So people, I think we can expect to see more and more people going on to short and long-term disability. We've already seen that psychological health was increasingly becoming the number one reason why employees were going off work. And that's only going to continue to rise. And I think that what we need to understand as HR professionals, as organizations, is that there are things that we can do to support these individuals. And mental health is, it's not just, you know, mental health is not the same as mental illness. And mental health affects all of us, 5 out of 5, whereas, you know, the stats around mental illness were around 1 in 5. So mental health is something that affects everybody. And that means that there are skills, knowledge, and information that are going to benefit all of us. And so prevention and education is huge here. There are things that we can do to support employees so that they don't go further down the continuum towards poor mental health and potentially into mental illness. I would say one other thing that, you know, it could impact significantly is around our culture and the culture in the workplace and way of being, way of working together. So when mental health starts to impact the workplace in a negative way, if stress starts to take over, it could affect culture. So I think the opportunity now for HR and for organizations is to shape culture a little bit and to bring in initiatives and values and strategies that are going to help shape not only culture, but mental health of employees working within that culture.
Let's now delve into some of those strategies. So as I mentioned in the introduction here, today we're considering how mindfulness can be used by HR and by leaders to address mental health issues and help build mental agility to better respond to those stresses and anxieties we've been speaking about so far. Jeff, why is mindfulness so important? Maybe you can start by giving us a bit of an overview of what it is and also perhaps why it's become a very popular tool.
Mindfulness indeed has become pretty popular, and it's been on this, it's been trending in popularity, I would say, over the past 30 years. And that's an important indication that it's not just a fad, but it's a trend. And trends are lasting, fads kind of come and go. But mindfulness is more than a fad. It's a trend that's based on science. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's become so popular, that there's a lot of evidence to show the benefits of it. And I think another reason why is that it works. It's experiential, it's practical, and everybody can access it. So it's simple to access. And that's an important way to start to understand what is mindfulness. Well, mindfulness is something that's inherent within all of us. It's this quality of consciousness or a mental factor, a quality of awareness that we can access in our daily life. And it's something that we can all strengthen in our life as well. So we can think about mindfulness like mental exercise. Mindfulness practice is like our mental exercise, not so different than physical exercise, although it might look a little bit different. But I would remind all of our listeners that at one point in time, like, physical exercise was it looked pretty strange. Like in the 70s, if you saw somebody running down the road, you'd probably look behind them and question, like, who's chasing that person? And now we recognize that's jogging. You know, that person's going for a run. And so it's totally normal to have a physical workout routine. And now what's becoming more normalized, this mental workout routine. And mindfulness is a form of mental exercise.
What is the evidence base and some of the science behind mindfulness?
Now, many people who are familiar with mindfulness will recognize the name Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who first started researching mindfulness-based stress reduction at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center in the early 80s. And they started working around chronic pain. So those were the first studies working with individuals with chronic pain, working into stress reduction, and showing significant benefits for populations reducing stress, reducing pain, and then working into populations with mental health concerns and developing programs around mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, working with depression and anxiety and showing benefits with clients there. So looking at the benefits of going through this psychoeducational program, learning to be mindful in response to anxiety and depression, showing just as significant benefits as with when combined or in adjacent with medication. So we've seen benefits there. We've seen the rise of research being done in the workplace. And this is one area that MindWellU actually contributes to, looking at research being done in the workplace. And we've done a number of studies looking at the benefits of mindfulness in the workplace. And, you know, what we see is increases in workplace engagement. So employees are more engaged in the workplace. They have higher and significant higher levels of job satisfaction. They're able to resolve conflict better. They're showing increased adaptability and cognitive flexibility. And that's huge in today's world where it's all change. Like change management was a huge initiative within the workplace, you know, prior to COVID. And now we're all going through massive change. And it's our ability to adapt and to be cognitively flexible in the face of change, which allows us to rise above and see opportunities. So if we're stuck resisting what is, resisting change and wanting things to just go back to normal and just waiting for things to go back to normal, then we're kind of stuck in a little bit of a response or our stress response. And we're not able to look above or look beyond to other opportunities that are unfolding in the workplace. And I think as organizations, as difficult as things are, and as they difficult as things will continue to be, showing resilience includes being able to adapt, being able to see where the opportunities are arising so that we can adapt our work and the work of organizations in skillful ways. We're also seeing rises in creativity and in organizations. That's really important in terms of both problem solving and innovation.
So I've been fortunate enough to have a little bit of teaching in mindfulness and mindfulness practices, but for me personally, it's very much limited to trying to be present in the moment. Whether that's, I don't know, I like to meditate when I'm sitting in the sauna, or if I'm at a beautiful beach somewhere, I try to be present in the moment there and take in the sounds and the smells and whatnot, which is possibly a very tiny aspect of what you're talking about. What also you just mentioned, I think, there is how actually it's a proactive technique. It's a proactive practice. So I'd be keen to hear from you now that how can mindfulness techniques be used by HR and by employers to address mental health and help build that mental agility and better respond to stress and anxiety in a proactive way to perhaps build in mindfulness into programs to help very stressed, very distressed employees right now.
You kind of alluded to this, that mindfulness can be brought, you know, into those moments when you're on the beach or in the sauna. But more and more, we can bring mindfulness into everyday life. And I think that's the opportunity that HR professionals have, organizations have, to bring it to their employees, that it's not something that needs to be framed as a mental health necessarily initiative. This is not something that we have to go into a quiet, dark room or sit on a beach to do. You know, being in the present moment is about being in the present moment, whatever moment that is, whether that's sitting at the dining room table with our families, or whether it's sitting at our desks or having a conversation with our colleagues or a Zoom meeting with a client. These are all moments, and they're all opportunities for practice. And that's the nice thing about mindfulness, that it doesn't have to take this time out of your day to do. Mindfulness is about putting time into your day and getting more out of your day because you're practicing it. So we're all, another example is like eating. You know, we all have to eat at some point in the day, and it's just about how we're eating. And can we make that more of a practice? You know, do you actually taste your food when you have your cup of coffee in the morning? Are you actually enjoying that cup of coffee? Are you tasting that cup of coffee? A practice of mindfulness could be as simple as, you know, paying attention to that first sip of coffee and feeling that mug in your hands. So the opportunity I see for HR is to be skillful in how you bring this this skill into the workplace. And I always talk to organizations about tying it to values, existing values and strategies and health and safety. This doesn't need to be made out as a wellness initiative or as a mental health initiative, so it kind of isolates some or puts it into a box. Mindfulness is a real core competence that has significant benefits for doing your job well. And just like you wouldn't question providing a workplace safety training for people in a safety sensitive situation, or maybe in an industrial setting, you shouldn't question the importance or significance of offering mindfulness training so that your employees can be at their best. This isn't necessarily, it's difficult to force somebody to do mindfulness, but we can encourage it and we can invite it. And I think that where we can be skillful of is, how do we make it as part of our everyday life and not necessarily make it as something that's different or something that is intensive meditation practice? Because that's a misconception about what mindfulness needs to be. I think we're advancing to a place where mindfulness can be integrative. It could, and there's a continuum in how we can learn mindfulness. It can start in very simple ways, from drinking a cup of coffee, sitting down and having a meeting. And a lot of the organizations that we work with, you know, they start their meetings with a Take Five practice. And I'll mention more about Take Five in a few moments, but integrated into their policies and practices of meeting. And then it could move on into a more intensive forms of practice. Just like if you're working out, you've got a physical workout routine. You know, we all aren't training for a marathon, right? Like, going for a walk is good and is sufficient. And so we need to be able to find our entry point for mindfulness. And there is an entry point for everyone, so that they can make it a practice in a way that works for them in the workplace.
We're coming towards the end of this interview already. Just the last couple of questions for you. And you did just mention there around the Take Five exercise that you guys offer. I'd like to now just ask you to briefly take our listeners through the premise of your Take Five exercise, and also if there's any materials on your site where they can learn more about that, please do share that too.
Sure. Take Five is our core mindfulness and action practice that we teach during our main online program, the MindWell Challenge. And it's a mindfulness and action practice. We say that it you don't have to close your eyes or go into a quiet, dark room. There's five core tools to Take Five, including notice the cue, notice the new, notice the body, notice your breath, and notice the now. And the premise is that we can all develop our own customized practice of Take Five in our life. And that's the whole point of the MindWell Challenge, is to develop your own customized practice. And we give you support as you go through it over 30 days, and you learn how to integrate it into your life as a new habit. So it's not so different than, you know, brushing your teeth. It becomes a natural part of your day, something that you don't have to plan, and doesn't take too much time out of your day. Again, it's more about putting time into your day. You know, Take Five could be as simple as noticing newness around us, noticing, you know, sights, smells, tastes, touch, which I just mentioned. It's about how you're sitting in your chair right now, listening, or when you sit down to do your work, and you feel your body sitting, your feet on the floor, your bum on your chair, lifting and lengthening up your spine. It's bringing your attention back to your breathing. As you're sitting, as you're writing, as you're having a difficult conversation. So it's regulating your attention to bring it back into feeling the breath in the body. When you're sitting in another Zoom meeting, can you lean on your breath, lean on your body as a way of staying present, as opposed to drifting off and checking your email, going into another tab, but just practicing staying present and noticing the now. The last step is all about seeing what's present for you now and bringing a mindset of non-judgment, acceptance, and patience. So these are all little tools that you can learn to skillfully integrate into your everyday life in a way that works for you. And that's what we really try and engage our participants with. And you can check out more about Take Five. You can actually find the practice of Take Five and an infographic about it at mindwellyou.com. And we have a lot of free resources out there where people can access and learn more about it.
Okay, thank you. And that's part answered my usual last question, which is how can our listeners know more about the company? So that's mindwellyou.com. But also, Jeff, how can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, always sharing different resources and studies that are being put out on Mindwell, on mindfulness and through Mindwell. So you're happy to connect with me through LinkedIn, Jeff Soloway. My email, Jeff, G-E-O-F-F at mindwellyou.com. You can always access me through email as well as through our website. You know, we're constantly active there. And if people are interested to learn more about Mindwell and services that we provide, we've got a kind of a blended approach of services and mindfulness to offer to organizations, both self-directed and live. And I think that's another kind of a final point just to leave your listeners with, that if you're trying to think of ways, how do we bring mindfulness to an organization? I think it is important to have a balanced approach of both in person, or not necessarily in person, but live is online these days, as well as self-directed. So giving people a bit of choice where they can learn on their own, but also be part of community and ask questions, because people learning mindfulness often have questions. So I think that's an important aspect, and always happy to connect with you through our website at mindwellyou.com.
And I hear that podcasts are another awesome way to learn, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so that just leaves me to say for today, Dr. Jeff Soloway, founder and chief training officer at Mindwell, thank you very much for being a guest on this episode of the HR Chat Show.
Thanks, Bill, for featuring the importance of mental health and mindfulness.
And listeners, until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the HR Chat Podcast, brought to you by the HR Gazette.